Hey, hey, all you lovely people out there. You've got a lot going on in your day with big dreams and big goals for your world. Are you ready to talk some shizzle and learn some shizzle from leading entrepreneurs, changemakers, coaches, and overall interesting people who like to shake things up? I'm your host, Taylor Shanklin, CEO and founder of Creative Shizzle, and I am stoked to bring you a fresh episode of Talking Shizzle today. This show is all about helping you think differently so that you can grow. Talking Shizzle is brought to you by our team at Creative Shizzle, where we help businesses, entrepreneurs, and social good innovators make amazing marketing shizzle happen. Check us out on the web at creativeshizzle.com. Now, let's talk some shizzle. Hello, hello, friends. We are back with another episode of Talking Shizzle, where we get into all sorts of fizzling topics about how to grow your business or organization. Today, I'm really excited to talk about measurement and leadership and female empowerment and in the realm of leadership with Sherry Chaney Jones. Hey, Sherry, how are you?
I am wonderful, Taylor. I'm so excited to be here.
It's good to have you here. I really like what we're going to talk about today. We're going to get into, I think, a lot of hot topics that'll help entrepreneurs and other female entrepreneurs too, thinking through their growth journey. But before we get going, tell us a little bit about who is Sherry anyways?
I like to describe myself as a serial social entrepreneur. I have more than 20 years of experience working with government, nonprofit, social enterprise, helping them use data to solve complex social problems. You know, I've done everything from impact measurement and program evaluation, but basically I have a huge passion for using data to solve complex social problems. And that stems from a really early age when I went to pursue a degree in industrial and organizational psychology, partially because I was curious how we design selection tests. So how do those tests that, you know, we all took in high school predict performance? So that was something that was really fascinating to me at a really young age. So that's where I went down a path of learning all about using data for prediction and becoming a statistician. And then luckily for myself, my very first job out of graduate school was helping people with severe and persistent mental illness find work. So using everything I learned about data and selection, but putting it to the social good space and helping case managers identify if someone has really high anxiety, maybe we don't want to put that individual in a really high pace job with a lot of people interaction. So making sure we matched one's diagnoses with one's job characteristics, which then led to a really fascinating career, which we can talk about more, into the social sector. I worked in government for 10 years. Then I started my first company, Measurement Resources Company, which is an organizational development and research firm. And then just a little over 3 years ago, almost 4 years ago now, I launched a high growth tech startup called Sure Impact to help automate how nonprofits and government entities measure and communicate their impact. And if that's not enough, I also have 4 kids. So I'm a mom of 4 kids that range in age from 16 to 8. So I am very, very, very busy, but I wouldn't want it any other way.
That wasn't enough, Sherry. No. It wasn't enough, clearly.
No. Yes. I'm like, I just always want to be one louder.
Well, you've got a range of ages too that you're parenting, so that's got to be interesting. But hopefully the older ones now kind of help with the younger ones. Is that so?
Yeah, my son is on the verge of getting his driver's license, so I think our lives are going to change for the better here soon.
Well, I love that idea of looking at what's the problem and how do we understand data and statistics to go about solving that problem and approaching that problem. Tell me a story about one of the biggest social problems you have solved with data. Can you walk us through a story of like looking at, in addition to the one that you kind of briefly got into, What's a cool story about when you're like, hey, here was a problem for a client we had. Here's How we use data to solve it.
Well, I have so many favorites. I mean, I've worked with over 250 organizations and helping them use the data to solve their problems. But I think something that was really meaningful to me and in some ways went full circle was kind of a backstory, is when I was 10, I won an essay contest. I like to say that was my first professional kind of win, because I wrote an essay that I wanted to cure AIDS. So I was a young person during the Ryan White days and was, you know, kind of interested in biology and pathology. And that's what I thought I wanted to do. And so I won this essay contest. But now fast forward then 20 years later or so, I had the opportunity to work with the Ryan White Part B program with the state of Ohio. And one of the problems that they were facing was, how do we get individuals living with HIV and AIDS into care? Because the good news is today in our world, we have medicine that does a really good job at suppressing one's viral load if they have HIV, which if they have the right medicine and they keep that viral load down, not only will they be healthier, but the transmission of the virus is reduced significantly as well. And so, although I did not become a pathologist, here was an opportunity for me to be part of the solution, to be part of increasing quality of life and also decreasing maybe the prevalence of HIV and AIDS. The challenge that we helped leaders solve was, why were people not seeking care? And we did this entire data-driven research project. And we always use mixed methods, looking at qualitative and quantitative data, but through survey research, through focus groups, looking at best practices that different clinics were using that had really high rates of engagement in care and reduction in viral suppression, and compared those to organizations who didn't. And really finding, identifying and lifting up the importance of culturally responsive care and what those best practices are and how to use, you know, peer supporters and use others in the community for people to feel like the care is safe and not stigmatizing. So that's, for me, that was something that was really personally meaningful. And that's just an example of the kind of work that we've done in the past.
I think that's awesome. That's a great story. Good job. Like, thank you for being you and doing what you do. I mean, that's amazing. I'm so bad at math. I could never imagine doing anything like that. It's just so wonderful to talk to smart people like you who are good at that stuff, who can figure it out.
Well, you're the yin to my yang, right? Because you're all things creative and branding. And I'm like, here's a bunch of numbers. Make it pretty, please.
Tell me what to put on the paper and I'll make it look good, but I can't compute it.
Yeah. So we need each other. We need each other.
We do. We do need each other. So let's talk about, when you go in, you have a ton of experience in going in and solving a lot of different types of problems. What does it usually look like to go into an organization from day one and help them figure out what to measure, why to measure it, and how that measuring that thing is going to have an impact? Like, walk us through what that looks like. Because I think a lot of nonprofits really struggle with this. They don't even know what numbers to look at or what data to try to understand. And these days we're all swimming in data. There's so much of it, but then what do we do with it?
Mm-hmm. That's the great question to ask. And it's my favorite question to answer. And I always say, let's start with the end in mind. So unlike maybe small business and your financial data that you're looking at every day, some smart accountants have come up with this like general accepting, I don't even know what they're called, the GAAP principles, right? Those elements where it's like across the board, these are the data elements you should be looking at. But when we start to think about whether it's small business or social enterprise, it's not so cut and dry. So we have to start with the end in mind. And I like to use this very, very simple exercise called the 5 whys exercise. So any leader should be asking themselves, why do we do what we do? So think about that mission statement, if you're a nonprofit or even if you're a small business, but just think about that mission statement that you have or that vision you have for the world. And why do you do what you do? And so is it to end hunger? Is it to, like the story I just told about helping people living with HIV AIDS? Is it to increase wellness? Is it, you know, just why do you do what you do? And so we're going to start there. And that is, anything related to kind of those whys is what you should be measuring. And we say that every organization should have 3 types of data. They should have, what do they do? So that's, you know, the activities you perform, the demographics of the people that you serve. So what did you do? How well did you do it? So if we go back to that example with the organizations serving individuals with AIDS, that was where that cultural competency came into care, or what are, you know, how well do you outreach and bring people into your organization? So measures of how well, that quality measure. And then how are people in communities better off? Those are your outcome measures. And that's the change you want to see, the behavior change you want to see in those that you serve, or the changes you want to see in your community. And when we really think about those three buckets, what did you do? How well did you do it? And how people are better off? When you have those three types of data in your organization, then you become, and you ask me why this is so important. It's because now you can stop wasting your time doing activities that don't drive to the changes you want to see in the world. And without that data, it's very difficult to know, one, are you achieving your mission? And two, are you offering the right services to achieve those? And once you have data that shows, yes, your services are effective at achieving your outcomes, then you can scale it. And also, fun thing, we found that organizations that have these three types of data and are able to communicate it are more successful at raising money than those who don't. So that's another really important reason why organizations should want to be involved in measurement.
I mean, that's a great point. Being able to communicate the data back to your constituency, you have to understand it in the first place to be able to share stories of impact and really show your donors, your supporters, your volunteers, your advocates, how it's getting put into place and into practice, and how what they're giving is having an impact. So I think that's a great way to think about why you've got to understand your data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm curious, Sherry, about your kind of shift from agency model and now also into tech. Tell us a little bit. The first company you founded is more of an agency model, right? Mm-hmm. And then now you've got this new high growth tech company.
Yes.
What does that evolution look like to get into the technology? And just tell us a little bit about that story, about how you got there.
Yeah, that's, I think, the story. I'm still kind of trying to figure out, how did I get here? How am I now a software CEO? But it really came out of my customers, the market, and what they needed. So we had been helping organizations develop what we call their impact measurement framework. So identifying for a variety of different organizations, what are those key outcome and metrics that they should be measuring? And they were coming to me and saying, Sherry, we absolutely love the insights your firm's providing. What technology should we be using so we can have this at our fingertips? And I will tell you, I was so resistant, you know, back in the early, like, you know, mid 2015-ish or so, I was very resistant and would tell anybody I talked to, I'm not a software company. I don't want to be a software company, you know, and I've learned in my life that anytime I say I am not, I should just accept that, no, yes, you are, and you're going to go do that someday. But it came out of my customers. And to be honest, I tried to give the idea away a couple times after I did extensive market research and found that the product that I thought should be in the market did not exist, or the different tools that were out there didn't work the way I thought they should. I went to some people and said, hey, I think this is a really good idea. Just hire me to be the consultant to help, you know, define the product or be the product owner. But I don't need to own the technology. And that was a couple times, and that didn't work out. So finally, I kept getting this question over and over again and getting frustrated that no one else was taking this mantle and moving it forward. We call Sure Impact as an impact management platform. Didn't feel like there was one out there. So then in 2018, I went to some of my customers and said, you know what, I think we'd like to build this platform. These are the things that this platform will do. Are you interested? Would you be interested? Would you buy it? And we found that 55%, so again, I was very data-driven into my path to this company, but 55% of our ideal customers said that if Sure Impact did what we said it would do, they would purchase it. So that, I mean, the data was there. It was evident. There was a need for this. People wanted this. So I found about 10 of our current customers. They gave us the first year's license fee up front without any, you know, on a PowerPoint deck alone. That was our journey. That's how we began. And we said, okay, let's start developing it.
That's fantastic. I mean, it's just like, here's one PowerPoint. Give us a year's license and come on board. Well, that, you know what that tells me? I mean, it tells me that you built a lot of trust and rapport with your customers for a long time, and you clearly must have done good work to where they believed in you and said, make this happen and we'll buy it. I'm guessing the software is the software making a lot of what you do just more accessible to them, more on demand, mm-hmm. or is it different than what the agency was doing?
Yeah. So in some ways, it automates just a little bit of what the agency does. How I like to explain it is, you know, QuickBooks, small businesses use QuickBooks, but you still need an accountant to help you put all that together and help you, you know, understand the data. So what Sure Impact does is it helps our customers get out of, like, what I would like to say, you know, that Google Sheet, Excel world where you're spending all your time, energy, and effort just managing spreadsheets. It takes that and it brings it to action and activity. So it eliminates a lot of time doing busy work, and it really just makes data collection, analysis, and reporting much more easier. We're building the capacity, I should say, of nonprofit organizations, but we're also taking the hard out. So I mentioned these impact measurement frameworks. And your earlier question about what should we be measuring, a lot of, especially in the nonprofit world, the leaders who went into those jobs did so, and we're grateful that they did, because they have a passion for the problems that they're solving. Just like you said, you know, maybe math and numbers isn't their favorite thing, but they understand the importance of it. And so Sure Impact has a measures, best practice measures library built right in. So if an organization comes to us and says, yeah, we'd like to use your technology, we're like, great, here's some best practice outcomes that you can be tracking, and here's how to track them. So we're really we're making it easier. We're giving them the blueprint for success, and that's scalable. And when you're having to rely on an agency to do that, it's not as scalable.
It's funny that you say, and we'll kind of get into some female entrepreneur stories next, but it's funny that you say, oh, I never wanted to be a software CEO. And I'm like, oh, see, I always wanted to be a software CEO. And then I started first, because like when I started my company, my vision for it was to go software first. And actually a good friend and mentor to me said, you can do what you want to do first as an agency, and you can learn from it, and then you can build the right software. So, mm-hmm. you know, we've just gone in, you know, opposite directions. You were like, oh, I'm going to be an agency, never software. And then no. So yeah. I love that. Sometimes you just have to start trying things and then see what works, you know, and it's all a process of just like continuing to throw things at the wall and see what sticks, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about, so you're a serial entrepreneur in the social impact space. You are also someone who is very passionate about being an advocate to women. Mm-hmm. And I'm really into this topic myself too. I think, you know, when we were talking before this offline, you mentioned about how, you know, you like to help coach women out of the I can't mindset. And that's something that I agree. I think a lot of females think, I can't do that, or I can't live up in this, you know, quote, man's world or whatever. Or maybe mm-hmm. as an entrepreneur, you've run into, you know, moments in your life where you're like, hey, I'm going to walk in and I'm going to do my thing just the same as everyone else. It's kind of segue into that. How sure. do you help other women get out of that I can't mindset in this sector that we're in?
Yeah, just to back up the passion of why I'm so passionate about this is, first and foremost, I think for myself, that's been my biggest obstacle that I've had to overcome for success. Whether it was, you know, why was I so resistant to being the software CEO? It's because I didn't have any in my community. I didn't have any female role models. So I thought that's what men did. I remember when I left the Department of Aging, which was my government job, to start Measurement Resources Company. Again, it was, how will I market myself? How will people know about me? Like, just things that I didn't have any examples or models. And so now that I've figured a lot of this out and have done it myself, trial and error, I want to be that example. I want to be that role model for other women, that it's possible. And then, because I also am so data-driven, something that a lot of people don't know, and this is one of my personal missions to totally break this statistic in this generation, is that if you were to walk in, at least in my state, it might be different in your state, but in Ohio, If I were to walk into a room of 100 entrepreneurs, only 2 of that 100 would be female making more than $1 million in their business. Only 2. So only 2% of all entrepreneurs, at least in Ohio, are women making over $1 million. That's just unacceptable because the ratio between men and women business entrepreneurs is not that great. It's definitely not 98% versus 2%. It's, you know, like 40%, 60%. So I think that's why it's so important that we, those women of us who figured it out and have accomplished these goals, help others see a path forward. And so, you know, I think one, just walking the talk and being a role model and showing, you know, I have a daughter that's showing her that you can be a great mom and you can be ambitious. I see a lot of women stop themselves because they think, well, if I make enough money just to pay for myself, then I'm successful. And they are. I'm not saying that they're not successful, but it's, they could have a much greater impact on the world. Because when you scale a business, you not only can provide wealth for yourself, but you and your family, but you get to be a job creator. You get to be an influence. We think about all the different women's equality things in our country and in the world. When you're the decision maker, you have greater influence to create that change. And so I think it's really important beyond just thinking about taking care of yourself and your family, but with success comes more power in political spheres and, you know, how policies and business policies are made. So there's so much more beyond just that.
You know, it's something that I've thought about too, as like part of my passion and purpose in my company is to help other people prosper, whether that's the clients that we're serving, but mostly the people who get to come work here. Mm-hmm. And so I think maybe that's the, you know, women maybe tend to be more nurturing. We are the mothers, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, I've got kids too. And often, you know, struggle with the balance of feeling like, oh, I am an ambitious woman. And that's just my DNA and my makeup and who I am. And I can't really change that.
Yep.
Tried once. Didn't last very long. I was a stay-at-home mom for 4 months. And that was a little bit of a failure in my family, maybe, but maybe not, you know? I don't know. It's, I think it depends on how you look at it and how you approach that. And just kind of decided, you know what, I am ambitious and there are things to share and have impact. So I do think for the females out there who feel like they struggle with that, my therapist said this to me recently, and I thought it was brilliant. She said, tell your brain what you want it to know. I'm about to get a big canvas and paint it and put it up on my wall so that I read it every day. But I think particularly for females trying to figure out what they want to do with their career, rise up in the leadership ranks, tell your brain, ladies, what you want it to know. It's about not saying no to yourself anymore and trying to figure out, well, how can I go and nurture both my family and myself and my relationship with my partner, if you have one, and my life ambitions for the world and for impact. So,
and my advice to any young woman or older woman or any woman who's like, I feel that I have this calling or this dream to start a business, or if they're already the entrepreneur and they said, I feel like I'm supposed to take it to the next level. Well, one, I'll be your biggest cheerleader and advocate and say, yes, let's make this happen. But what's always worked for me is just keep taking the next faithful step. You know, hold that vision out there. Like you said, tell your brain what you wanted to know, or, you know, put that vision of where you want to be out there. And then just keep taking that next faithful step, because it can be scary. It can be daunting. It can be overwhelming. But that next step is easy, right? Picking up the phone call and asking someone for advice is easy. And then following up with the people that they recommend you talk to is easy. And reading that book is easy. And, you know, so that's how I have built everything, is just, what's that next step that doesn't feel scary? Because if I keep following those steps, at least so far, it's gotten me to where I am today.
Yeah, it seems like you've got a really open mindset to taking one step every day.
Yeah.
And seeing where it takes you. And I applaud you for that.
Yeah. Well, something I had to do in the Share Impact world is I had to raise money. I had to take outside investment. And that was probably the most terrifying thing I've ever done in my life. And I challenged myself to basically reach out to at least every week, 5 people I did not know. Because what the worst thing that they could say is, no, I don't want to talk to you. So it's little things like that that have really big impact.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. The worst thing they can say is no. So let's wrap it up with, I want to hear about what's your favorite job that you ever had besides what you do running your companies?
So I've loved every job I've ever had. So I guess I'm really lucky in that regard. But if you made me say, really, what was your favorite job you ever had? I would say it was outside running my companies. In college, I worked as a Girl Scout camp counselor, and I got paid to take young girls backpacking and primitive camping and caving and spelunking, horseback riding, like just to get paid to go on those adventures. And, you know, to me, that I wish I could do that always.
It does sound like a dream. Well, you're also lucky that you never had a job you didn't like. Not everyone just could say that.
I know. I do feel really lucky in that regard. My very first job out, you know, besides babysitting, was working for who is now my mother-in-law, but at the time was my boyfriend's mother, and the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. I sold driver's license at 15. And a lot of people don't really like that job, but I love that job because I got to interact with people and understand all the different people. And it taught me what I wanted, what I didn't want to do when I grew up, but what I did want to do when I grew, like, you know, so I just saw that as a really interesting life lesson and experience.
Yeah, that's great. It's sometimes about teaching yourself what you don't want to do and what's not for you. And I love your positive perspective on that, where you're like, well, it was okay because I learned what I didn't want to do. And I learned a lot of things while I was there. So that's great. Well, Sherry, let's hear where people can find you. People want to get in touch with you. What's the best way, best method, best place to go to learn more about Sure Impact and or getting in touch with you and your team?
Yeah. So if you're interested in, you know, checking out our software and how Sure Impact helps organizations better measure and communicate their unique impact, I'd say go to sureimpact.com. And if you're just interested in having a conversation with me about entrepreneurship or anything you want to learn about, the best way to find me is on LinkedIn, Sherry Chaney Jones. And then if you're looking for advice on creating an impact measurement culture, I'd go check out Measurement Resources Company, which is, if you Google Measurement Resources Company, you'll find us, but we're Measurement Resources Company CO. Or no, what are we? MeasurementResourcesCO.com. That's what we are.
Awesome. Well, it's been a pleasure talking data shizzle and entrepreneurship shizzle. Ooh, that's a mouthful. Thanks, awesome. Everyone. I hope you enjoyed the show today. Thank you, Sherry, for sharing your wisdom and your time with us. It was really a joy. And I appreciate all that you do for our world.
All right. Thank you.
Well, hey there. That was fun. I love how much mind-blowing and mind-opening shizzle our guests bring to us with every episode. We hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did. Make sure you hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcast player so that you don't miss a beat of the Talking Shizzle podcast. And if you're listening on Apple, be sure to let us know what you thought and leave us a review. We'd love to hear from our listeners so that we can bring you all the good, juicy business growth shizzle that you would like to hear about. Get in touch with us and follow along at creativeshizzle.com or email us at podcast@creativeshizzle.com. Until next time, keep making your shizzle happen.